Well, Jeff Merrick, it was a work from home day for myself and Ruby, and I have to admit that occasionally the television gets turned on when it's work from home day, and occasionally it lands on reruns of Sex and the City on the E Network. And I mentioned this for one reason and one reason only. I mentioned this because the pilot was on today. The pilot from Sex and the City was on today, which is a very exciting thing. It's an episode that's not often on the air. You only get one pilot after all. And you're saying to yourself, so when was the pilot aired? It was 1998. And here is why I'm mentioning this on this very podcast.
Yeah, so what are you talking about? Are we on the air or are we just goofing off right now?
No, we're on the air.
We're not on the phone?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just me and you.
Okay.
There we go. They smoke everywhere. Oh, my God.
Oh, I know.
They smoke everywhere. 98 was what, 16 years ago?
I remember.
They smoke everywhere.
I remember, I was talking about this with someone the other day, too. Like, did everybody just stink? Because there's nothing worse than being around smokers and coming home and it's on all your clothes. Like, oh, man, I got to wash this. Oh, it's terrible. Like, did we, like, as a society, did everybody just smell? And we were all just used to it. I can remember when Tim Hortons, okay? Tim Hortons was the first national donut coffee chain in the country to ban smoking. And I was one of those dummies that said, oh, man, they're shooting themselves in the foot. This is going to destroy their business. It was one of the best things that ever happened to them and became a huge success. But my ultimate question still is, did we all smell really bad?
Did everything else smell really bad?
Yeah.
Can't remember. I might have been too young to remember what a plane smelled like back when you could smoke on a plane. But the idea that everything on that plane, the seats, the stewardess uniforms, everything was marinating in smoke is I can't even wrap my brain
around.
And the donut shop thing is perfect. That's spot on. Because you think about this. So when I grew up in Jersey, the place where all the people used to go to smoke at like 3 a.m. was Dunkin' Donuts, right on Route 34 in Matawan. You'd go to Dunkin' Donuts and smoke. And Dunkin' Donuts literally was there was no restaurant. It was a counter. It was like a bar. You went up on a bar stool and you sat there and you had cigarettes literally three feet from the donuts. Yeah. And all you're thinking is now, you're looking back at it, you're thinking, oh, I'm sorry. I'll have the Boston carcinogen.
Well, you know what I always wondered about? I always wondered about when you went to bars, and now, of course, bars are all non-smoking, but the bars that, obviously they were all smoking when I, first started drinking. I always wondered about the glasses over top of the bar.
Oh, God.
That would just
get
filled with smoke, and then, hey, I'm going to have a rum and Coke, and you pull down a glass, or I'm going to have a Tom Collins. And all of a sudden, you're filling a glass that's just been filled with smoke a second ago. It could have been good for you.
Sir, I ordered the vodka. Why does it look like scotch?
it is a weird
world.
When I started university at Guelph, 1990, I think I was the first year that they didn't allow smoking in the class, and the individual desks still had still had that hole cut out where you put your own ashtray.
I can't even conceive
of
that. You're telling me that if you went to college in like the 1980s, let's say, could sit in class and just smoke while the professor is spewing out his knowledge to you?
This is truth. This is truth. And if there's anyone old enough in this pod and listening to this podcast right now and you used to smoke in class at college, as Greg says, or university as we call it in Canada, let me know on Twitter.
That's amazing.
Because I think I was the last year. 1990 was, I think, the first year that you weren't allowed to smoke.
That is insane.
In class. It wasn't that long ago.
I mean, Mr. Hand scolded Jeff Spicoli for having a pizza delivered to class, let alone lighting up a pack of Marlboros.
Over here, dude.
In class. I know. That is insane.
Do you have a favorite hockey player smoking story?
I don't. I mean, I love the listen. I'm a cigar guy, so any shot, and they're becoming increasingly rare, but any shot of a player smoking a big stogie is my favorite. Yeah. And Marty Brodeur, I think post-Cup, I want to say post-2000, might have been when he lit up a huge stogie, was one of my favorite shots. What's your favorite? Wait, hold on. Are you going to tell the one? Because you told one before about smoking with the smoking between periods. Is this where you're going to go with it?
Guy Lafleur was famous. I mean, he had like two decks on the bench in the dressing room.
Roll the story for those who maybe
know
the podcast. Whatever one you're going to tell.
Nothing. I was just we were talking about hockey news magazines the other day on the podcast, and if I go roll back to some of those like 1960s and 1950s hockey news magazines, I was leafing through them in the summer. There's plenty of ads with hockey players, you know, hawking cigarettes. Tons. Oh, it's tons of hockey players selling cigarettes in the hockey.
It's become like taboo. I mean, the smoking thing, a taboo, but also like all the guys that chew, and one of them, you know, just saying he might play in Washington, might be kind of prominent, might be looked up to by a number of people,
yeah,
around the world,
yeah.
You know, there would be times when you'd walk into the locker room, you'd see the can of Skull or whatever the hell he had,
yeah,
in his locker, and it would be gently suggested, perhaps this should be something you don't report.
Oh, really? Chewing? It's funny, a lot of the OHL kids at my gym, they all chew too, like while they're working out, and it's like, I could never do it.
I could never do it either. And I was, you know, I was a huge Lenny Dykstra fan growing up, when he was with the Mets, and of course, you know, he wound up getting mouth cancer from all the chew that he used to have stuff in his cheek. Yeah. But yeah, no, that never appealed to me. That kind of seemed like it was sort of gross a little bit.
Yeah. It is weird when you find out. I don't know why it should be. I mean, hockey is nothing more. Sports in general are just a microcosm for society. There is that sort of, oh, my God, he smokes, when you find out of, like, a hockey player. You know, like growing up, like I saw Rick Vive having a cigarette on Yonge Street before a game once. Like, oh, wow, the captain.
Well, now it's like, listen, why? You know, now it's like a thing where you're not even, you're thinking about what's required to be a good hockey player, you know, stamina, a strong respiratory system. Mm-hmm. And it does kind of shock you that somebody would smoke today because of all of the care that goes into maintaining their body, all the crazy Gary Roberts nutrition shit. Like, I'm worried about me passing out an elliptical. I never had a cigar before I go to the health club. You know what I mean? I'm like worried about that. I can't even conceive of a guy sneaking a smoke between periods in today's NHL.
You know what? It is like the one thing that has zero redeeming qualities. Right? And I say,
oh, come on, you
zero.
Look cool.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah.
You look cool.
Okay, so secondhand smoke is secondhand cool then? Is that what you're going for here?
That's right.
Oh, dude, you're just secondhand cool. You just kind of wallow
in
it.
You get the rub. You get
no,
the rub.
No, but like, I even say this as like a vegan. Like, even from my, you know, perch of not eating meat, I can understand how there are some redeeming things nutritional about eating meat. And I get that. There is zero redeeming, zero you get other than the potential to get cancer from smoking cigarettes. Like, given everything that we do know about it right now, and you're an athlete, why would you even bother trying it?
You know what story hasn't been written, by the way, yet?
Hmm.
And I maybe I'm giving away content here, but, you know, I'm kind of lazy. I don't know if I'd write it anyway.
Attention, everyone else who wants a quick, easy story.
The modern day athlete and vaping. How many players in the NHL vape instead of smoke now?
I don't think. I've never heard of it with athletes.
I don't know. I mean, you think about it. I mean, you know, if your concern is the effects of smoking, I mean, that's why everybody's going over to the vaping thing anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The only ones that I ever really hear about are the Russian and Czech kids that come over.
Yeah. Well, the Russians all smoke.
Yeah.
But that's no because thing. They're trying to recreate the atmospheric conditions of their homeland, much like how everybody in New Jersey smokes.
That's funny.
Hey, smoke them if you got them, Jarmo Kekalainen, by the way.
No kidding.
This is the end of the ordeal, ladies and gentlemen, for the Columbus Blue Jackets and Ryan Johansson. Rijo signs the 3-year bridge deal.
Hang on a second.
$3 million, $3 million, then $6 million.
Hang on 1 second.
Yes.
We having problems with the stream. I'm getting all these tweets. Mark Cole, Lexi. Oh, yeah. Getting silence. What's happening on the stream? Maddie, do you know? Maddie?
Check the stream.
Maddie, are you talking to someone? Yeah. We're having problems with the stream, bud.
Cross the stream. Well, my mic is on. Your mic is on. We can hear each other. Hopefully everything's okay.
Right.
Kekalainen and Johansson come to the terms on the 3-year deal, $3 million, $3 million, then $6 million in the final season. They do get another year of RFA status out of them. This is the deal. The framework of this deal has been something that the Blue Jackets had been pushing for a while. Maybe they went a little high in year three. By that time, he's got arbitration rights. He's going to get $6 million anyway if he's averaging 30 goals a season in the next 2 years. It's fine. It angers me that we had to get all the way down to this point with this negotiation with Johansson Overhard just dicking around.
Hang on 1 second again, Wish.
Steven Stamkos.
Let us know. We just jacked up the levels, I think. So it was pretty quiet. I think, was that the issue, Maddie?
Can you hear us now?
I think we're all good now. Tweet us in if you're if the audio is
were the
better.
Levels too low.
I think they might have
been low. Too low.
I don't know. Sorry, I'm totally interrupting your flow, man. You're
no,
on,
it's
you're
fine.
On a, you're on a good freestyle here about Ryan.
I'm not on a freestyle. I'm just saying it's a good deal. The one interesting thing from Jarmo's press conference today about this contract with Johansson was somebody asked him whether or not an ultimatum had been given out to Johansson. Mm-hmm. And Jarmo says this, well, the details are going to remain the details behind the scenes and no telling. And I'm like, you know what? This is a scant few weeks away from when the president of your organization gave to the dollar details about the contracts you're giving this kid that he was rejecting. Now all of a sudden we're playing cloak and dagger with the facts. Is this how it works, Jarmo?
Yeah, well, maybe that's just not Yarmo's style. JD, sure, man, guns a blazing. I really do get the sense that Jarmo is very much in the school of being the traditional general manager, where to the public, to the media, you're not going to get anything by way of details, and nothing's going to leak out of his office. That's what I get from Jarmo. But
yeah, I get
did he not say that? And again, I didn't hear it. I was very busy getting a haircut, you understand, Greg. It's a very busy afternoon for me, I know. Did he not say that he told Johansson and his representation that when the season began, the $12 million deal is off the table?
Well, it sounded like he said when the season began, that's it. I don't know if he explicitly said the money was off the table. But I do know for a fact he did say that, you know, when the season began, sort of that's it. So I guess maybe that's inherent in that the threat was that this deal evaporates when the season begins. I don't know. I thought they played it well. They wanted to get him into a bridge contract. They didn't want to commit long term. Johansson, you know, spouted off back in June about how their inability to go long term with him was a slap in the face, and the bridge contract was something he wouldn't sign, and all this other jive, and he signed it.
It's never
and
a good idea.
$6 million in year three is going to be looked at as a bargain for this kid if he winds up doing what he did last year for the next 2 years.
Look, man, sports takes you to weird places. And as an athlete, we've seen – like if you're an athlete, you've seen enough players having to eat their shoes, really, and go back and do things that they said they would never do. I mean, you can cite chapter and verse all the players from 2005 who said – I will never play in a league with a salary cap. I mean, how many guys? How many guys did you hear say that? And they all came back. Was there one player who said, "Nope, I'm not going back to play because there's a salary cap and I have my standards"? No, they all did, of course.
They all did.
So I know it's tempting to blast the other side when you're in a contentious negotiation and you think that your services aren't valued, but that's what free agency is for. Free agency, then you control it. And you decide what's up, whether you're going to resign or you're going to go somewhere else, based on how that organization has treated you. But until then, hey man, players signed the CBA. CBJ had a lot of leverage here, and I know they were losing players and Boone Jenner. That situation probably hastened things a little bit for the Columbus Blue Jackets. But CBJ dug in their heels, and they know they had to. You know what? They knew they had to because they have some big guys on the horizon to sign to, and they didn't want to set this precedent. So
it definitely greased the gears, those injuries, and he obviously comes back now in a different situation than he left it, where both of his linemates are on the shelf for weeks on end. Horton, who the hell knows? But yeah, they needed him back. They only lost one game in the preseason, although as Robert pointed out this morning, they got outshot something wicked. But
like
they needed
97
him
shots.
Back. Yeah, they needed him back. They get him back. They get him back for 3 years. And then adjust accordingly. Do you get the sense? And listen, I know this is a very Toronto-centric question that I'm about to ask, because everyone in Canada always assumes this about anyone that's not
in
an original six city.
Win the election.
No. I mean, do you think that he is one of these guys, much like any other player in a non-traditional market, who is predestined to leave that market once he goes UFA?
I don't know, because I don't really know the player. I have had, I think, two exchanges with him, once when he played with Portland with the Winterhawks and the other when he was with Columbus, but I really don't know him. So I don't know, but judging on the comments that have come out this summer, I would be warmer to the idea that when this guy gets a chance, he's going to bolt. But I don't know. But I don't know. I don't know him. I don't know his affinity for the organization. Listen, when you're young, you say a lot of things that when you're a little bit older, you regret. We all know that. We've all done that. But I don't know. This was a strange one on me for Ryan Johansson this summer. But I don't. Again, I qualify by saying I don't know him.
It was a strange one too. I wonder if it's a kid who just feels like, you know what, I need to strike while the iron's hot. I've seen too many guys get dinged up and concussed and hurt and whatever. I feel like I've got the creds now to get a long-term deal, get long-term security for me and my family. I'm just going
to
do it.
I don't know where the anger comes from fans to the player in this situation. All he's doing is trying to negotiate.
Oh, I do.
Don't he's just trying to negotiate himself the best possible deal. That's all.
Well, you listen. Well, because, you know, we all believe in our heart of hearts it should be a meritocracy, and 1 year does not make a long-term contract.
But if you can get it.
If you can get it, but, I mean, there's a certain, I think, I was born on third base, but claim I hit a triple kind of aspect to this.
I understand that. And, listen, Edmonton's kind of going through that, too, with some of their guys that they didn't give bridges to and got the big ticket right out of the gate.
No.
Right?
No kidding. Yeah.
Right, but again, that's a different marketplace, and part of that is a show to the marketplace that these guys are committed and are going to stay long term and aren't going to leave. So that's part.
And that's
of it.
That's not
part,
to that, besmirch that, the yeah. Well, no, I think in Edmonton's case, I mean, God, what are we 20 years removed from the exodus? I mean, in Edmonton's case, there's every reason to lock up those kids because you are legit worried they are going to leave.
Yeah.
You know, I think in Johansson's case, it's one of those situations where. You know, he's worth what he's worth, and he's worth this contract. He's not there yet for the other stuff. And I think fans are okay to be generally wary, pissed off, whatever you want to say, yeah. about a guy looking for a long-term deal after one good, I mean, very, 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 very good season.
I do wonder what he's like this year having missed training camp. And all guys say the same thing. Oh, you know, I was working out on my own. And, yeah, I guess he was skating with the Vancouver Giants in the Western Hockey League. Yeah, I was in the gym. I was working out. I was skating. But nothing replicates in an NHL training camp. Ask Drew Doughty.
PK was okay, though.
You know what? PK, yeah, PK's a freak. he's a freak. Like, he got his timing back in, like, 2 weeks. But that's more the exception than the rule. And it happens just, I mean, ask Drew Doughty what it's like.
Yeah. John Roberts writes in, I don't understand fan outrage. He wasn't under contract, therefore doesn't owe anything to the fans.
Right.
Team.
Yes.
Yeah, he doesn't. No, that's
what, and
no,
that's, and again, that goes back to one of the biggest pet peeves. It was not a holdout. Hands up, who's going to work for free of the audience right now?
If people are calling it a holdout, they're wrong, but it doesn't mean that you can't look at this guy and his contract demands and say you're being completely unreasonable.
Demand is such a loaded word. You can call it a demand or you can call it a request. You can call it an ask.
It is a demand. When you reject one framework of a contract and say, I don't want to do that, I want to do this, that's a demand. I am demanding that you give me a long-term contract or I'm not signing. That's a demand.
I am negotiating with you. It is a negotiation. The word demand is so – the word demand is used when you want to demonize one side.
It is a demand when you demand that you negotiate on his terms. I am demanding that you stop giving me these nickel and dime 2 year, 3 year contracts. I demand that we start talking about this long term deal.
How come it's only the players that demand things and it's never ownership side that makes a demand? We never hear about the Columbus Blue Jackets demand. It's a negotiation. Both sides, it's a tennis match. This idea of demand. Dig their heels in the sand, and that's
it. I would like to reclaim the word demand.
Not me.
I agree with you. I think it's become a coded, loaded word. I would like for me to be able to go to Burger King and say I demand no tomato on my Whopper, and for it not to seem like I'm a prima donna.
I demand.
Like right now, if I do that,
I demand my condiments
on the side. Let's reclaim demand.
Okay.
I think you're completely right. It's become a word that's become too loaded and too coded.
Here's what you do. Next time you go to Burger King, your favorite fast food restaurant, write down what you would like on a piece of paper, slide it to the person across the counter and say, these are my demands.
So you want, like, hey, where to, sir?
Burger,
I demand you take me to 6th and 11th.
Start using it in conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. You come off as the biggest asshole in the history of assholes, but
get on the elevator. I demand you press number 8.
Reclaiming that
that word.
Still or sparkling, sir. I demand you give me still. All right, Arthur Staple coming up on this program to talk about the big weekend for the Islanders. I don't know if you know this, Merrick, but every Islander fan thinks they're a playoff team now. It's pretty interesting.
And plenty of non-Islander fans.
Oh, yes?
The plenty of non-Islander fans do as well.
And that kind of ties into our QOD. The QOD today, of course, being which team, 2014-2015 season, which team's record will shock the hockey world? And he has come to shock the world. That's because he is the shock master.
Oh, geez. There
Pyro
we go.
Goes off. Helmet comes off.
Speaking of Achimania the other week, that's still the ultimate one.
Heels off. PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. At Jeff Merrick, at Wyshynski on Twitter, hashtag at MVSW. With that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
I demand you start the show.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
When I heard that we had a shot at interviewing Howard Baldwin, my first thought was that elephant walk story. Imagine that, 20 naked Whaler hockey players doing the elephant walk in circles.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
There are books that you want to maybe read, and then there are books that you definitely want to read, and this is a book I definitely want to read.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
That's right.
The baby elephant walk.
20 naked whalers. That intro, by the way, from Mark Cole. Thank you, Mark.
That was a hell
of a story. Yep. Did you get the feeling?
It was
though,
really fun.
Did you get the feeling that if we were all in the same room with microphones doing the podcast, that Howard would have opened up with a lot more of his stories? It's always tough when
I
you're on the
phone. I think so, but I also think it's kind of interesting that, like, the immediate reaction from some people when we did the show was, oh, it's just Merrick wanking off telling stories.
That's what I said
and then,
it was.
Like, a whole other.
That's kind of what I said
yeah,
it was going to be.
Yeah, but then the other facet of our audience, which is the non-streaming downloading facet of our audience, heard the podcast. And, like, you got some really nice notes from people.
It was cool. I'm glad that people enjoyed it. I can understand why people wanted to talk more about Mario and the Pittsburgh Penguins and all that. I get that. Listen. I framed it very selfishly to kick off the podcast, I thought, too. I'm going to be totally selfish, guys. I really apologize. I'm not being a proper member of the media, which is the middle ground between, you know, the thing you're talking about and everyone listening or watching. I was just being selfish with some WHA stories.
What I find amazing, though, is that, like, you get accused of self-indulgence, yet I'm asking questions about A Sound of Thunder and the Ed Burns special effects movie in which he steps on a butterfly. And
how did you get to duck when the axe was swinging? Like, what the hell? How come you didn't get through it? Like, come on, man. I took bullets on that one.
Great.
It's all right.
He did. You did. It's true.
It's okay. I'll do it again.
I didn't really have a good question for Mystery Alaska. Mystery Alaska is kind of a movie that it just sort of exists in the hockey pantheon, but it's not one of those movies that really, like, I hold up there like Slapshot and other flicks like
I
that.
Thought it, I like watching it just because visually it looks stunning. I love the way it's shot.
It looks great.
Was it just me, or did you get the sense that Howard was taking credit for the Winter Classic?
I did,
remember,
he totally did.
Like, and then lo and behold, there's all these outdoor games.
Right,
like, wow. Right. It's awesome.
And they're all based on Mystery Alaska. They're all NHL teams going to random cities to play beer league teams. That's completely the basis for the Winter Classic. Yeah. That's not to disparage the good name of the Buffalo Sabres in that Winter Classic against the Penguins. I'm not trying to call them a beer league team.
Wow, some good players then.
I completely agree. Cut day. It's cut day.
It's farewell to Goon Day. Seems like.
You know, let's talk about that for a second. Chris Stevenson made that point this morning about when Colton Orr was clipped by the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Shock.
So that's Colton Orr going down to the AHL. That's Paul Bissonnette getting his PTO ending with St. Louis without a contract. That's Kevin Westgarth doing the same. Cassian. The beat goes on. A lot of guys who make their bones with their fists out of jobs right now.
The one that I'm most surprised by is obviously Toronto. If you listen to what Randy Carlyle said last week about wanting some protection on the ice and needing some muscle and all the traditional things you've heard coaches talk about when it comes to enforcers, it almost leads you to believe that this maybe was not his decision.
Really?
Don't you get that sense? That don't you think that one of Fraser McLaren and Colton Orr, one of them was going to stay for that quote-unquote security blanket?
I think we're all kind of assuming that because of his the way he's vehemently fought for these guys in the past. Maybe there's I'm not going to sit here and say a guy can't learn from past mistakes. Maybe he realized that, hey, you know, this isn't the way of the world anymore. We're costing ourselves.
Did you hear him last week? He all pretty much said that. I'm putting Colton Orr on this team.
I'm trying to be optimistic here, Eric. Okay. I'm trying to believe this man isn't simply just a puppet for the people that are
by the end of the year, his name will be Randy Corsi, not Randy Carlyle. Sure wish.
By the end of the year, his name will be Scott Gordon.
Oh.
What?
Oh, that's snug. Ooh, that's a tight turtleneck.
Who do you think takes over for Randy when he's fired?
Well, I think initially it'll be one of, you know, Peter Horacek or Steve Spott. Mm-hmm. Long term, I'm not sure.
It won't be Spott. It won't be Spott. I mean, like, we know that Phil doesn't like his game plans, so he won't get the job.
Because he's the first star player to disagree with an assistant right. coach, because it's never happened in the history of the game, but it happened in Toronto. So, happens on every team, guys.
Assuming that Dubas gets the rub and he becomes the GM, you have Shanahan as the president of all that he surveys. I don't know.
Let's get to our guest. Pick up this fascinating talk about thuggery in moments.
All right. Joining us down the line, a man to talk about a team that obviously, without question, is now maybe listen, Arthur, I'm not a man of hyperbole, but based on the reaction from Islanders fans, I would say this team should start just chiseling its name on the Stanley Cup based on the moves it made over the weekend. Arthur Staple from Newsday joins us now to talk about the New York Islanders. Hello, Arthur. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How about yourselves?
We're good. We're good. And eyebrows raised all over the NHL, I think, this weekend. Your thoughts on the two defensemen coming in, Boychuk and Letty?
Well, they're certainly better than, for the most part, what the Islanders had had. So, you know, they didn't have too many places to go down after last season. And you know, they addressed the goaltending in the summer with Halak and Chad Johnson. And they addressed some forward depth with Grabowski and Kuhlman and Konecker and whoever else they added. All that was left was the defense, and it wasn't looking so good. Their team defense, I mean, preseason is preseason. They looked a little bit better in their own zone. That's probably because they actually had goaltenders in there. But they've got guys that are banged up. Calvin DeHaan hasn't practiced in a week. Lubo Vishnovsky seems to be made of glass these days. So they needed some top four guys. And I've covered this team for a few years now, and usually when you say that, oh, they need this, you don't really get that. And then they went out and they got that, and they got two guys who could be their first pair when the puck drops in Raleigh on Friday. So, you know, there's not too many situations, like you said, you just kind of say, huh, they did that, and now it's happened, and they've got two bona fide guys that everybody seems to feel are certainly upgrades for them. So.
Does this mean that Travis Hamonic doesn't have to play all of the minutes now?
That's correct. He came out to watch some power play work and joked that he didn't get the text from Jack Capuano to be out there. But, you know, he's a guy who's been put in some situations that maybe aren't best for him, you know, even still as a very young guy, even though he's had a few years in the league, and he can focus on maybe not facing up against everybody's best night after night. He and Calvin DeHaan were a good pair at the end of last season. But, you know, Calvin DeHaan is a second-year guy. Travis Hamonic is still a young guy who's still working on his game as a defenseman. You know, it shelters them a little bit to have these two veteran guys who have been on, you know, defenses that are way better than the Islanders, but also can bring a little bit of that. You know, they're going to be in better situations for more responsibility and more minutes. And then if Vishnovsky can ever get back, him and Thomas Hickey have been a very effective pair, and suddenly that's the third pair. You know, it's the depth there that these moves have created really makes a defense that people are going to take notice of.
I'm fascinated by Boychuk leaving the Boston Bruins defense, where he was the third best guy on what was either the best defense in hockey for a couple of years or right there with the LA Kings as far as depth goes. I'm fascinated by a guy who's been sort of second banana somewhere else getting his time to shine. From what you've seen from Boychuk, do you think you could blossom into that number one shutdown monster D-man for the Islanders?
I mean, I think he's you know, I don't follow the Bruins as closely, but I know he's played plenty of minutes with Chara, so he's seen some other teams' best, and I think this is going to be a different situation. This team is not as obviously as deep or as skilled as the Bruins, so I think there'll be an adjustment period for sure. But, you know, if he's out there with Nick Leddy or with Calvin Dahan or whoever else on his left, and with John Tavares' line up front, I think maybe that's the situation where you've got that five-man first unit of sorts that maybe that'll be a different sort of look for him and, you know, more offense, more puck moving. You know, it's hard to predict how it'll go. He was working as the one defenseman on their first power play unit today, and I think Jack Capuano is ready to throw him out there and put his big shot to work. So maybe from an offensive standpoint that might change some things for him, but, you know, he's also a guy who's 30 years old. He's coming into a team that's got one 38-year-old and a bunch of under 25-year-olds on defense. So that's, you know, where he fits in there too is as a guy who's always been an upbeat, happy, positive guy, you know, who's taken a lot of the Bruins' young D under his wing, and now he's going to have a lot more of those guys to do on the island. I think it could be a situation where a guy with the right personality and the right makeup can really thrive.
You know, John Tavares had a really interesting summer, rehabbing the injury, working out, skating. I know he was in Florida for a while at a skills camp as well. How does he look, and any lingering effects?
I think he was struggling a little bit with the game time in the preseason. Both he and Kyle Opposo kind of looked a little like they were kind of overdoing it a little bit at times, trying to do too much. And you know, the coach has been looking for someone to play on their left. They each played in five preseason games. They tried five different guys on the left. It looks like it's going to be Corey Conacher, of all people, who's going to start as the top line left wing. But I think, in general, you know, as Tavares goes, so goes that top line, and so goes the Islanders' offense. And, you know, I think with the situation where he's got Grabowski and Ryan Strom and Brock Nelson probably playing the second line behind him, and then Franz Nielsen, who had a career year, playing third line behind that, at least Tavares can look and say, we've got this depth, we've got people who can score. Maybe that takes a little bit of the pressure, the immense pressure that he puts on himself to lead. That takes a little bit of it off and allows him to relax and play the way he knows he can play. But I don't think anybody has any real doubts about what he can do coming off the injury. He's a guy who commits himself in the off season to doing whatever it takes, and I think he was doubly so committed this summer.
Oh, give me a second. I'm just making a note for my fantasy team. Corey Conacher.
First line, left wing, Kenesha College.
Arthur, you tweeted out some line combos that you figured for opening night, and I noticed that you have Grabowski and Kuhlman playing on two different lines, and I think that surprises some people that see them as a package deal. Is that just for balance's sake, or do you think they might end up playing together?
I think they might end up back together. You know, all these things could be jumbled up if they come out flat in Carolina on Friday. I think the bigger surprise to me is that Grabowski was a guy that I think they saw as a center, and now they kind of edged back the other way, and they tried him at the top spot with Tavares on the left. That didn't really work out so well, but I think the speed and the emergence of Ryan Strom kind of in the latter half of camp, and Brock Nelson, who the coaching staff is incredibly high on as a center, a guy who's a really responsible two-way guy who also has some skill. I think that line could create a lot of problems offensively for other teams if they can gel well enough, if Grabowski can get used to playing the wing. I know he played there on Ovechkin's line at the end of last season, but that was really the only wing that he's played throughout his career. And with him and Kuhlman, I think the way they look at it is that, you know, that the third line with Franz Nielsen and Josh Bailey is more of a traditional checking line where, you know, it's a good group of possession guys who play well in their own zone, know where to be. So I think they see Kuhlman kind of in that mold of being a guy who's, you know, providing some depth, but also maybe fits in a little bit better further down against another team's top line or, you know, trying to shut down opponents. But it's all fairly temporary once the season gets started, but yeah, Grabowski and Kuhlman were together, and they're still sitting next to each other in the locker room, so I guess that's something. But I think for now they're going to try to separate them and see where it goes.
They really are going to become folk heroes on the island, aren't they? Those two guys. Arthur, do you think those two guys become folk heroes on the island? Somewhere down, I mean,
maybe in Brooklyn. Maybe
yeah.
With a few more Eastern Europeans.
That's a good point.
In the neighborhood. good, but they'll be good. They'll be good. I think the Islander fan base, especially the social media ones, it's not the biggest footprint, so they tend to follow along, say, the giant footprint of the Toronto social media presence and right. regular media presence. So I think the better that Grabowski and Kuhlman play, the more it will enrage the Toronto folks, and that will pump up the Islander fans a little bit more.
That is true. What's the expectation for Ryan Strome this year?
The first week of camp, I think the expectation was he was going to Bridgeport. He kind of came out a little flat. I think too casual was the quote that Capuano had given about how he came out. And, I think he had been in a situation last year where he probably didn't think he was going to make the team, but he was working hard, and he went down, was an AHL All-Star, and came up for the second half of the season. So maybe young guys sometimes think they've arrived before they really have. And he came in and had kind of a sluggish week, and I think every member of the coaching staff talked to him and said, you need to pick it up, and he certainly did pick it up, and he's earned himself a spot on the second line right now with Nelson and Grabowski in second power play unit. I think he's going to get the minutes that he needs, and he's certainly a smart, creative player, and if he's got the minutes that he deserves and has earned, he's going to produce. And I think sometimes you need a kick in the pants, whether it's being sent down before opening night to come back in a couple of weeks. This time he got the kick in the pants and time to stick around.
Whatever the Islanders end up being, I think it's going to greatly depend on how Yaroslav Halak plays. I see a lot of praise for Halak. I'm not necessarily sold on the guy. I think he's much better in a tandem overall than shouldering the load. And I wonder whether or not some of that praise just comes from the baseline for Islanders goaltending being so low.
Yeah.
Are you sold on Halak being the kind of guy who can backstop this team to the playoffs, or is there just sort of like, oh my God, he's so much better than what we had last year, let's shoot him to the moon hype-wise?
I think that the seeing a goaltender who moves as fluidly as he does and plays in a confident manner, those would seem to be the minimum standards to be an NHL goaltender, but they really weren't met the last couple of years. Evgeny Nabokov had a great run in the lockout shortened season, but other than that, he's been injury prone. And last year, when Kevin Poulin and Anders Nielsen were in there, and they both had an opportunity to try to establish themselves as young goaltenders, there was a lot of teaching that needed to be done in between games, and a lot of mistakes, and any defensive mistake that was made ended up in the net. And I think just seeing two goaltenders who have been in very professional, very high pressure situations, who can come here and they're not going to take a significant step back, I think it's kind of a boost to the rest of the team when they see their goaltenders being aggressive, covering shots, talking a lot. It makes a difference, and just the absence of it for the last year and before 2013, for the last couple years before that, is huge. And I think there will be lots of people saying, well, how could St. Louis have given up on this guy, or this, all this stuff. Yeah. And I think the standards are just a little different elsewhere, and maybe that'll change as the season goes on. But as numbers wise, I think people have certainly thrown it out. An average year from Halak and Chad Johnson means X number of goals from last year. Maybe they don't blow all the 15 of the two goal leads that they blew last year. And that's the difference between being in the bottom of your division and being at least fighting for a playoff spot. So, the minimum standards have certainly been raised, and I guess there's certainly room to go above that, and whether Halak can go above that remains to be seen. But minimum standards, that should be the rallying cry for these guys this year.
Hey, Arthur, last one for me. How did Michael Dal Colle look at camp?
He looked green. That's the way I would put it. He looked like he was trying very hard to learn a lot and take it all in, secure in the knowledge that he wasn't going to be around very long. He looked okay. I think he was a little overwhelmed, like a lot of the young guys are, and he took it all in, and he played a couple of games and looked okay in them, and took a lot of instruction, and now he's back. And I saw he had a goal and an assist a day after leaving here to go back to Oshawa, and I think that's the best the Islanders could hope for, that he and Joshua Hosang also go back to the Ontario League and light it up and get some confidence, and we'll see where they are in a year. But it was not a situation where he was going to surprise anyone and suddenly make the team. There was just too many other things to be evaluated here.
And finally, for me, and thanks for the time today, Arthur, Andrew Barraway apparently set to become majority owner of the Arizona Coyotes, whiffed on the Devils, thought he had a deal with the Islanders, went and tried to sue Charles Wong. That suit gets dropped. What are your thoughts about Andrew Barraway as far as his potential ownership of the Coyotes?
Well, all I know is when we get to Glendale, after he takes over as owner, I'm going to watch the tires on my car, because anything that's got and even slightly related to the Islanders, I imagine, is going to be treated very poorly out there. But the team bus may break down somewhere in the middle of the desert. You know, good for him, I guess. You know, I think his dealings with Charles Wong were not very productive, I guess, on either side, since they didn't get to the conclusion they wanted. I think, you know, Barraway obviously was a little sore about missing out, or maybe having the price jacked up on him in the middle of negotiations. These are things that people with way more money than me know how to handle. So I can't pretend to be familiar with those sorts of high-level negotiations, but I guess at this point Charles Wong found buyers who he was a little more amenable to, who had a little more money to offer, and Andrew Barraway found a team that he could buy a majority share of. So hopefully everybody's happy. There's no more lawsuits. There'll be no backstabbing or, you know, buckets of ice water strewn around the visitors' dressing room when the Islanders get out there in a couple of years when Barraway's the majority owner. So hopefully all's well that ends well there. Everybody gets what they wanted. Barraway gets a team. Wong gets his sale. And Islanders fans, the long-suffering ones, can look forward to two new majority owners who have lots of money and lots of interest in owning their team.
Interesting stuff. Arthur Staple, ladies and gentlemen, the man who will cover what will obviously be, with the addition of Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk, a playoffs, nay, a championship season for the New York Islanders. Thank you, Arthur.
Thanks, Arthur.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Guess what I think I just did?
What?
Well, I'm trying to sign up for the we'll get to the Islanders here in a sec. I'm trying to sign up for the fantasy draft. I think I just deactivated my Yahoo account. Shit. Damn it.
I was using this graphing calculator to try to find my fantasy hockey team.
Well, I'm on a team with Lexi, and she can't manage it unless I go in and approve it. And I was doing it while we were talking to Arthur and not fully paying attention to
the bad
thing.
News is I couldn't find my team. The good news is I wrote the word boobs if you hold it upside down.
I'm an ass. Damn it.
Yeah, reverse fantasy draft is happening on Tuesday night, by the way. A plethora of awesome listeners with awesome team names, 16 in all, including myself and Merrick's team for Reverse Fantasy League. In case you aren't hip to it, if you missed that episode, it's a fantasy league in which we reward penalty minutes, we reward losses by goaltenders, hits, we reward all of the things that shouldn't necessarily be rewarded, and we also have what I consider to be, remember the old Rock and Jock games on MTV,
ladies and gentlemen,
where you used to be able to take a 50-point shot by hitting a basket that was well, like 50 feet off the floor or whatever? That's the shorthanded goal. If one of these feckless goons gets a chance to score a shorty, that's 20 points. That's your whole week right there, folks. Yeah. If one of them gets a shorty.
Yeah. How many teams?
Hold on. Now that I think about it, is that going to encourage people to not draft goons and to try to draft like guys that are going to get a bunch of shorties?
Dominic Moore, first overall.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to rethink this.
No, don't think.
Oh, just do it?
Just do it. Care.
Close your eyes and do it?
Yeah. Six pack, light switch, just do it.
Where I am right now in my predictions for the Eastern Conference, and this is not set in stone, I have until tomorrow. Well, maybe tonight. It might be set in stone after tonight. I'm liking 3 out of the Atlantic and 5 out of the Metro right now. I think the ones you cement in the playoffs right now are Boston, Montreal, Tampa, the Penguins, and the Rangers. Just ink them in.
Right.
Etch them on stone. They're all in. That leaves you with 3 more spots. And I'm thinking, I think the Devils are a playoff team. I really do. And you know, you're a homer. No, I'm not a homer. It's a playoff team. If they didn't suck ass in the shootout last year, they're a playoff team. If they didn't give Marty all those starts that his old ass hands fumbled away, they're a playoff team.
Old ass.
And now
hands.
They've gotten better up front with Camilleri and with Havlat. And now they're going to give Corey Schneider 60 starts. They're a playoff team. I do believe the Islanders should be a playoff team. I do. I think their defense is much improved. I like the offensive balance. Would love, you know, you look at that first line. And you say to yourself, how smoldering would that bridge have had to be to not bring back Molson to play with Tavares and Okposo? Ugh. Slot him there instead of Konecker? Mm-hmm. I would feel a lot better about life. But I think the Islanders should be a playoff team. Columbus is a playoff team.
I think the key it's going to sound so simple and stupid, but they can't afford one big injury. I think we're all on the same page. We love what they did with their defense on the weekend. And I'm a big Travis Hammond guy to begin with. If they get the goaltending and they stay healthy, they're in. But I still see them between 7 and 12.
I think you got four teams for three spots. And that's not including someone from the Atlantic, you know, having a above their heads kind of season. And it's the Devils, the Islanders, the Blue Jackets, and the Capitals. And I'm having a real struggle right now figuring out which one of those teams I'm leaving out. Because I think the Devils are a playoff team. I think the Capitals are a playoff team. I think that the Blue Jackets are a playoff team. But I also think the Islanders are a playoff team. So I don't know who's leaving the party.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Can I put down...
Can I put down nine? Can I add a wild card and create my own
playoff
format?
Didn't we do that last week? We did that last week on the show. By the way, I think I'm back into my Yahoo.
All right, that's good to know. So you, I tend to believe at the end of the day, I might still leave the Islanders out with the Devils and the Capitals getting back in. So I feel strongly the Devils get back in, and I feel strongly that having corrected the tire fire that was them at even strength and giving Braden Holtby an actual goaltending coach that's not going to completely wreck his game, that the Capitals will be back in the playoffs. Also with – listen, you know what's funny, dude?
What's up?
Islanders fans right now are popping champagne and planning parades around Barclays Center with the addition of Johnny Boychuk and Nick Leddy. And the Capitals signed Niskanen and Orpik. Which duo would you rather have?
Niskanen and Orpik.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just saying.
No, I know. But the thing is, it's the Islanders. It's like what you said about the net. The bar is so low.
Yeah, they're psychologically damaged after all these years that anything that comes their way is going to be that's above what they already have is overpraised. Now, I like Boychuk. Letty's a spare part in Chicago. But I like Boychuk. I'm excited to see what he does.
Leddy was weird because regular season was really good, and then the playoffs, Quenneville was terrified to put him on the ice.
Yeah, because he was a liability.
No, I know.
Right? Listen, I life becomes so much better for me if the Islanders, Devils, and Rangers all make the playoffs. I'm in New York now. I don't care what the Capitals do anymore.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
Oh yeah,
I'll freely admit, you know, in those solid days of the Southeast Division, it was great. I knew there'd be postseason hockey every season. It was like a default setting. But now it's like, I need one of you guys getting in. One of you Rangers, Devils, or Islanders getting in.
Hey, how do I get into this fantasy hockey? I'm at the Yahoo's fantasy site.
For the love
here.
Of God. I will send Lexi probably
has. No, I got
the
link. Lexi sent me links, but I keep going in to join a league, and it doesn't give me an option to join a league. It just keeps asking.
Just follow the link that you were given.
That's what I'm doing.
All right.
I swear,
I'll resend the invite later. Your team's already signed up. It's in. Like, they're all 16 slots are filled.
But Lexi needs to have the ability to select for me.
So you need to go to your team and then allow her to be a co-manager.
Yeah, I get that. But the thing is, I can't even get there.
Jesus Christ.
Set up your team in seconds. I don't want to set up my team. My team's been set up already. How the hell did I get here?
I pressed all the buttons and the VCR keeps blinking. Jesus. 12.
Who put the grilled cheese in the VCR? Oh, God, do I feel so old right now. Oh,
the time keeps on counting down, but this soup isn't getting any hotter. You keep on putting it on kitchen timer, Grandpa. You have to put it on cook.
Oh my God. Oh, man, this is so bad.
If you don't accept the co-manage invite. I didn't get a co-manage invite.
Oh, my God.
You know, when I started in the industry, it was reel to reel.
Uh-huh.
Was chalk. Was mm-hmm. razor blades.
Yes.
Was tape. It took forever, but damn it, I miss those days.
Damn it. Oh, yeah.
I miss those days, man.
Joe Pack, I don't even know who Jeff Merrick is anymore.
So embarrassing, Joe.
The question of the day is, give us the team that you think is going to blow all of our minds by when we see their record at the end of the season. That could be a positive thing, a negative thing. Christopher Kraft writes in, definitely the Jets after getting piss-patted yesterday. Oh, wait, wrong sport. Definitely the Jets for the record of the most WTF trades in a season, starting off on the right foot. Trading for Peter Budaj, then putting Peter Budaj on waivers was a neat trick, wasn't it?
Yes. Now, did Hutchison need waivers as well? Like, if they tried to send him down, he would have needed waivers, right?
I guess so, which is why you don't.
Yeah, because he would have been picked up. Or would he have? Yeah, he would have been picked up. Who am I kidding?
Yeah, I think so.
He would have been picked up by someone.
It's so funny. Like, looking back on Shevoldayoff's record, though, the everybody was right. This was one of the rare NHL player for NHL player trades he's made.
Mm-hmm.
Everything
well, he
else
hasn't...
has been minor leaguers and draft picks.
Yes. Yes. Well, it almost seemed to me, and I know Shevoldayoff always gets torn apart about this for the inactivity, but I wonder if this isn't from above, which is, you know what, this team is not going to be, like, let's not try to hit fast forward here on this team. Let's let this team develop. It's going to be Jacob Trouba. It's going to be Mark Scheifele. It's going to be, you know, these types of players. It's going to be, well, Nick Ehlers, you throw into that mix now, too. He was a steal at Winnipeg, got him.
Evander Kane.
I don't know, Evander Kane. I think at one point they thought he was going to be something. But
Zach Bogosian,
if he can stay healthy, there's another one. It almost seems as if above Kevin Shevoldayoff was the idea that, you know what, let's let these guys develop. Right? Because it's not going to be Byfuglien and Ladd and these types of guys when the Winnipeg Jets are a legitimate team in the Western Conference.
And that's all good and fine and dandy, save for the fact that the fans are finally catching wise that
that's
they
the
are
problem.
Being taken advantage of.
Well, because Winnipeg dined out on, we're just happy you're back.
Yep.
And now it's, okay, you're back. How come you haven't taken out the garbage?
The last thing I
you're
want...
back. All you've been doing is, you know, sitting on the couch with your feet on the coffee table watching reruns of Sex and the City.
I was writing stories,
oh,
sir.
Right,
it was background noise.
Okay, good.
I like the idea that the most cynical, ridiculously funny, and cutting-edge fans in hockey could eventually turn heel on their own team. What happens at those games, then?
Oh, the most creative fans in the NHL if they go heel on their team? Oh, my God.
Right,
I would love it. I think every non-Winnipeg hockey fan would love it because there's no more a creative hockey fan than a Winnipeg Jet fan. That could be, dude. That could be glorious. That really could be glorious.
Isn't it wonderful that the general manager with the most inactivity in hockey literally has day off in his name? I don't know why it took me 3 years to come up with that.
God, I never picked up on that either. Shovel day off. Oh, my God.
Pierre Smith writes in, hey, guys, the world will be shocked by the Edmonton Oilers, who, despite the long-running This Is Our Time slogan, will run a record with less than 25 wins and get first pick again. I don't think they'll get first pick because I think they're going to get within sniffing distance of a playoff spot.
I think they're a better team.
They're a better team.
They're a better team. Benoit Pouliot helps. The defense will be better.
Yeah, Fane.
Nikitin.
Scrivens for a whole year.
I think it'll be Platoon.
Well, Scrivens and Fast, they're both good, though.
Yep.
So that's a better team. No, Merrick and I were talking about this before the show, actually. Like, the current, you know, dishonor for Connor candidates are Buffalo, obviously. Mm-hmm. Carolina.
Welcome to the competition.
Yeah. Philly, who I think if shit turns sour could easily just start, you know, tanking. Would anybody be surprised by that? knowing that they know that that Comcast will have more balls in the lottery hopper than anyone else.
Well, there's, and just for you on the same page with the draft, there are two franchise-changing players in the draft, and those are the two you keep hearing about. But there are – I did my draft list on the weekend. Top 10, everyone's getting a really solid player. Yeah. Everybody is getting a solid player.
So, and Calgary would be the other one, who I think is going to go young, and they're going to go with a bunch of goons. And they're going to be fun. They're going to be fun to watch. And there's no question that
But who are they going to fight?
Who
are they going to fight? Is no one left to fight? Calgary's going to have all of them.
Just John Scott.
Or John Scott and San Jose. Fight everybody.
There's no question that Bob Artley will get those guys playing. They were a real tough out last year.
They were a tough
hockey team, but they were a tough out, and they're going to be better in goal with Hiller.
They worked their butt.
But I think those teams are in the mix. And again, like Carolina, welcome to the party. Like you said, Jeff Skinner getting kabonged again. It is now we're not even a concussion a season. Now we're going into the preseason for our concussions with Jeff Skinner.
Yeah. No, I know. And you wonder why they didn't want him to play in the American Hockey League during the last lockout. He's such a good player. He's one of those guys where you look at and you say to yourself, A, this makes what Marty St. Louis has been able to do in his NHL career even that much more remarkable.
Exactly.
Now, I wonder, here's my question. A player like Jeff Skinner has grown up in the era of the onus of protection of people on the ice is on the hitter, not the hittee. Mm-hmm. Marty St. Louis grew up in a different generation, under a different style, where you need to protect yourself on the ice at all times, especially if you're a smaller hockey player. I've always wondered this. When we put too much of the onus of protection on the person who delivers the hit and the officials making the call, what happens long term? The player himself who's getting hit thinks to himself, he can't hit me. I've got my back turned.
Oof.
Right?
Uh-huh.
I'm protecting the puck. He can't hit me. He's not allowed to do that. Versus, how many times have you ever seen Marty St. Louis turn his numbers at the boards? Never. Never happens.
No.
But you look at the younger hockey, again, I'm Grandpa America again. You look at the younger players coming into the game right now. How often do they turn their shoulders and show their numbers?
Yeah.
All the time.
Right.
All the time. Because one, you're going to draw the penalty, or two, the guy's going to pull up because he doesn't want to get suspended. And look at Skinner.
Yeah. Well, in the Skinner thing, it was sort of like crouched down. Niskanen hits him in the head.
He didn't come out like with his elbow pointed. I don't think that Niskanen jumped in there saying, oh, I got a freebie. Oh, look at this.
Yeah, with noted hitter Matt Niskanen.
By the way, Emily St. Germain. I miss Emily. Back in the day, we drafted our teams on the playground, said Jeff Merrick.
John Roberts writes in, Tampa Bay, I think they'll win or finish second in the East. Is that considered a shock?
Maybe, no. I still want to see what life is like for that team without Marty St. Louis for a season. We've never seen it before. At least in the last decade.
Nope, we haven't.
Joey Nado, Sabres finishing the season with 88 points, missing the playoffs by one game, and crushing the hopes of fans everywhere. It's pretty good.
Ted Nolan makes the playoffs and gets fired.
Eugene writes in, the Florida Panthers either in a good way or a bad way.
New captain Willie Mitchell, by the way, if you missed it.
Yeah, I saw that. I love that, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Hasn't played a single game for the Florida Panthers yet, but nonetheless. He's the right guy.
And Weldy writes in, St. Cloud State wins a national title. Ryan Malone celebrates by having no clue how his pants got on his head for 8 days.
Oh, man.
Oh, Ryan. Oh, Bugsy. Sweet Bugsy. All right. It's about that time to call it a show.
Yeah, I got a punt.
He's got a punt. I got a punt.
And you got to send me some links so I can figure out how I can join this. And by the way, I'm not the only one. Rachel Donner saying, I'm having lineups setting issues. The new swap interface is much less intuitive than last year.
There should be a way to go back to the default setting where you can just kind of like use your pull down menus, I think.
I like Emily's idea. Let's just do it in the playground. You gotta do all shiz online.
That's the show. Arthur Staple, thank you for joining us. And you get a show tomorrow and a show Wednesday. They're going to both be very preview-oriented. I think we'll probably do maybe one conference tomorrow, the other conference on Wednesday. Break this thing down. Break it down to its smallest molecules.
Whoa, going quantum mechanics on us.
Yeah, and really open up the hood and see how the engine's churning.
Okay, we'll have a peek, change the oil.
And then we'll do cut picks and all that stuff on Wednesday's show as well.
Hey.
Trying to push down the line as far as we can.
One thing I do want to mention. Tonight, if you are in Toronto, all right, this evening at Shoeless Joe's at King and Duncan, it will be a book launch for Kenny Reed, who you remember from such podcasts as We're at Tall Boys.
Oh.
Yes. So we'll be at the Shoeless Joe's tonight. That's 276 King Street West from 7 to 9. Who else? Greg Oliver, a good friend, will be aboard as well. He's got a new book on goaltenders. And a couple other guys as well. But come down, say hi, have a beer, and celebrate Ken Reed, the awesome Ken Reed and his awesome new book on about hockey cards.
Totally reminds me that I have a plug too. If you are listening to this podcast now you are in the New York City area, or if you listen to this podcast before 7 p.m. and are in the New York City area, free of charge, 21 or older, at Le Poisson Rouge.
Le Poisson Rouge, the red fish,
That's the one.
Le Poisson Rouge.
158 Bleecker Street between Sullivan Street and Thompson Street in New York City. I am emceeing a hockey night.
Oh.
Hockey night at the Guelph Varsity Letters reading. We are going to have John Branch there to read from Boy on Ice, The Life and Death of Derek Bougard. And Howard Shapiro, will they be there to talk about his graphic novel, The Hockey Saint?
Mm.
And I'm hosting the night. Should be a good time. Very interested to hear a little bit from that Bougard book.
Let's get one thing straight here. On this podcast, you do the funny, I do the French. You got that?
Make sure that you bring a souffle or some cocoban, which is, of course, the meat of an old rooster, I believe.
Should I just stop the podcast before you offend the entire province of Quebec?
Perhaps you and I will open up about Le Beaujolais.
This is Greg Wyshynski starring in The Night of 1001 Stereotypes About the French. Greg?
Oh, I am twisting my mustache and carrying a bag with a big piece of bread sticking out of the top.
Stupid English pig with no brain.
Oh, tabernac.
Rub sack, six pack. Okay, enough. I'm getting into it. No, I got to go do some stuff. Get out of here.
Oh, thank you for listening.
We're going.
Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast.
Over.
La pensile est un de tableau.
Ouvre la fenêtre, ferme la porte. All right, we're done. We're gone.
All right.
Next
un,
stop. No.
Deux,
no.
Trois, fin.